It is February 1st, 2019. This is Kate Magruder with an interview for Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. Would you introduce yourself?
My name is Zoe Abel.
Where and when were you born?
I was born in Boston, Massachusetts. November 8th, 1939.
And what were some of the formative people or experiences? What shaped you as a young person growing up?
Ah, an unexpected question. Not about the 70s. I think what shaped me as a young person growing up was being Jewish. I lived with my grandmother who had spoke Yiddish, and then I lived in an area where later when my mother remarried, and I lived in an area where we were pretty the only Jewish family. So I think the sense of being different started actually at that time.
And how was it that you got from the East Coast to the West Coast? What brought you out here and when?
Well, I came up here in 68, so I came to the West Coast in 67. I was getting divorced, and I had a one-year-old. And one day, we lived in Boston, in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I was dressing her to go outside and dressing myself to go outside. And by the time she had on all her snow things that she needed, and I went down the stairs and out into the snow, I stood there for one moment and said, I'm moving. And that was pretty much when I left the East Coast, except for visits.
And where did you come when you came west?
My brother was in school at Berkeley, and I went there. I was in the Berkeley area for about 6 months. I came intending to find a place to live with people and to work with children.
And how was it that you came up to Mendocino County? Why and when?
I didn't know anything about California. I didn't know anything, period, pretty much. I came from a small town on the East Coast, and I came looking. There were people who were being arrested for political activities, and I thought, oh, maybe I can help take care of kids when they're jailed. And then there were the diggers in San Francisco. I met a man who lived in the Haight and just saw things that I had just very, very vaguely heard about. So I was looking for a place to have a group of people and do something with kids.
How did you know to come to Mendocino County to do that?
The man that I was, whose house I was staying in, which was a semi-communal house that was in San Francisco, he heard about a place for sale and he was looking. That's how come I moved to that house for my brothers, because he was looking. And we came up and basically he bought the place. There were other people involved from Millbrook. I didn't know them, who were also looking, and I think that's who he was in contact with.
And what place did he buy, and where was it?
We bought Table Mountain Ranch, which was at the end of Albion Ridge Road.
And what year was it that you came? And when you came, what did you see? Can you paint a picture of what you discovered when you came to Table Mountain?
I was the first person to come, except for a 16-year-old. In 1968, when I came up with my daughter, Sanji, there were sheep, and the people were still living there. I was able to stay at a tin Quonset hut at the end of the land, and this young man and I tried to make a garden. We had no idea what we were doing, and it was like a parking lot. I mean, we're not very successful, but I saw sheep, and I saw redwood trees, and on the way up the ridge, it was the pygmy, which looked very scrubby, and that's what I saw.
Can you describe what you felt when you came here? What was your sense of what you were embarking upon?
When I arrived here with my daughter in 68, in the spring, I did know because of Duncan's connection. I knew that I was going to live with other people. And I also had the vision that I would be somehow working with kids. That was it.
What happened once you got here to Table Mountain?
Well, basically, when I arrived to Table Mountain, within a few months, we had a meeting of all the people who were interested in being there from the house in San Francisco and from the people who came from Millbrook, and the people who were still living there moved out, and we said, okay, well, this is what we are. This is what we're doing. And We each talked about our visions, and I said I was going to work with kids. Many of us moved into an old sort of a place that they had planned to be a dude ranch, I think they called it. But there were some rooms, and there was a house. There was no electricity, and we just said, okay, this is how we're going to live, and others left, and we started. In terms of starting the commune, we did make some decisions. We decided to have meetings, to do things by consensus. I even think at that point, I think we even said we were going to share money and chores, and it just was falling into place. But we also had these ideas about how it was going to be. It wasn't just a free-for-all at all, ever.
How did the school get started?
Even when my daughter was little, we had a little preschool, and one of the people you're interviewing came up the road, and I said, do you want to take care of these kids? And she said, yes, and we built a little plastic wiki up. And then I started the school basically around 71 when she was five. We started the school, and other people who were living there helped. There was always a group endeavor, but there were people whose vision or energy led things like the garden or the school or working off the land and money. And so I started in about 71, and in 79, some of us formed all of us were still from the commune, formed a nonprofit, because I personally had made a contract with the school district. I started the Wales School with the school district as an alternative school at the same time that a friend of mine started the community school in Mendocino. So starting schools was a thing. We had to invent a way to do a grammar school. It was not as easy as doing high schools. So we basically invented a contract called Independent Study. And so after doing the school, just like papers would come and I would write not applicable for a number of years, then we were this program of Mendocino Unified School District.
Did you have a teaching credential? Did you have to have any kind of credentials to work with the Mendocino School District?
Well, because we invented the form, no, I didn't. I didn't have a teaching credential. I did have a BA. Before that, I think mostly independent study was like one child at home, was more like homeschool.
Was the administration at the Mendocino School District, was it unusually receptive to this? Did it make a difference who was there, who received your idea?
I'm sure that it did. And we had a very good working relationship. But the way that these programs were made, if they were connected, and there was only one high school program when we ended, there was one other program in the United States that was operating in a similar way, and it was a high school program. So basically, the district made money on us. So that was part of the motivation. And also, they trusted me. And I think that was really a big piece, was the personal relationships. But they did make money. And then when laws changed, the law became that there had to be equal support for the kind of program we were doing, because other people emulated that or invented it themselves or whatever they did, then they needed to have their own people. We closed, basically. After 20 years, we closed.
What was a highlight of the Wales School years for you?
The Wales School years, it's really hard to say. What happened in those years was that the district only sent us troubled kids. They never sent us the gifted kids. And it started just being our common kids and other friends. But then troubled kids from Fort Bragg hitchhiked to school. And there had been alternatives before us. The Salmon Creek School had been for a little bit. And there was one in Mendocino that I went and looked at. It's called the Free School. But we were the only ones to connect and become official, so to speak. And so the theater program was a really big highlight, and many people were involved in that. And my daughter's father was very involved after a few years, and we performed. The mime troupe performed with us up here. It's the only time they've ever done a double bill, as far as I know. We had a really good time with that. And then just things that people brought, woodworking and forge. We had a forge, and teachers came. Teachers, a special ed teacher, moved to the area and came to see, you know, what we were doing. And it was sort of like a bus station. And everybody had a little schedule, but no one else knew understand where they were going. Those were some of the things that stand out for me. And
how was the communal living aspect developing over those 20 years, over those years that the school was happening? Was the school right there on Table Mountain?
Yes, we built a building. We was running there was a summer youth program, and we built a school building to code, and it was right there. And we didn't have phone or electricity either for a number of years. We finally got phones. And then another parent came and set up computers with a generator, and it was just was what it was. We did put running water in. The commune was the commune. I mean, they were separate, but many, many people, it was completely supported. The school happened because of the people that we lived communally. And communally, we had meetings. We decided everything consensually. We had meetings that lasted all day. Like once a week, we had meetings to decide everything. There were many other endeavors going. You know, we had a mechanic situation going on that was enormous. We had an enormous garden going on. Many of us went out and worked on Country Woman magazine. We had the building codes to deal with. We had the codes, and our neighbors were not happy that we were such reputable hippies. I mean, we had a public school, right? And they were not really happy with that, some of them. So we had a lot of political work to do in that time, both about keeping the school going and about cabins and Class K work happened in that time. Being communal was a big thing. We had neighbors who were communal. My lover was communal. My best friends were, you know, many of them were communal. So there were some people who had a lot to do with the regular community, but I wasn't one of them. I had a kid and a school and a commune, so I was at the end of the road 90% of the time. We didn't even have to look at the question of what wasn't happening in public schools at the time to make a school, because we lived at the end of a dirt road. They were in the dark riding to school and back. Even if I had loved the school, they would have been going in the dark and coming back in the dark. So that was a big factor, to be practical. And then I think the question of self-direction, I mean, was there, of self, seeing what the interests were, of maximizing personal development, of having a range of skills that had to do with land, the land itself, and just that living in the woods. I mean, these kids were different than those of us who had them there or brought them there. They were already different because they lived on different earth under different sky than we had.
Why did Country Woman magazine end? What precipitated it stopping?
Country Woman magazine ended, I think just we were done. We had had Country Woman festivals for years. It was just the work of it. I'm pretty much. And Sherry and Jean made a book, a Country Woman book after. I don't know if you guys have seen that. Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of books out of this talking. We have a birth book from the first birth book that was done at Table Mountain, and River did her book Dwelling, which was about the houses, and the Country Woman book that came out afterwards. I think it was just done.
Were you involved, and was the school involved at all in any other, besides what was happening with the Class K and the Code Wars, with any other activism that was percolating on the coast?
Yes, we were involved with other political activities. Some of the children went with parents to demonstrate about nuclear power and wrote pieces which they came back, which we also exist. All this stuff, some of the stuff is at the Kelly House and some is in the Beacon, and that was very exciting. And our plays were always about things that were very important. And of course, there was the offshore oil demonstrations. So current events were built into the Whale Schools program.
Is there a time, an experience, a moment, an episode that just is emblematic for you of a sense of time when you felt like this is exactly what I want to be doing, this is working, this is the best place or thing that I could be doing right now?
That's a tremendous question. Like, is there a moment that stands out? So I would say, for a while, I was in the back of a truck, some of the kids, right, on the Albion Ridge Road, and that moment stands out for me in terms of what that song, this is the life, my friends, this is how it's an old. These are the days, my friends, we hope they'll never end. And so in the truck we say, these are the days, my friends, they'll never end. We sing and dance forever and a day. We live the life we choose, we fight and never lose. These are the days, these are the days. So that was not a significant moment in terms of actions. Another one was, I made a song, but we sang on the steps of in Ukiah when we were fighting to keep the school open, because it wasn't just Class K. It was about, you can't really have a school, and you just can't do that. You're just too reputable. And a hippie, you can't be that reputable. You can't be my neighbor. And so we were singing out there one time, and I remember that, and I can't remember the song. I didn't look for it.
When you say your neighbors, some of them didn't like you being reputable and also have a school, what do you mean by that?
They didn't like that there was a school next door. They didn't like that there were hippies there. Some people were wonderful and supportive always, always. But there were a lot of people who were not supportive of new people coming to this county. And because we had a school, we could be a bigger target.
What happened to the school building? And what did you do once the school closed?
The school closed basically because after 20 years, it was enough if we had to be more. The public school needed to either share the money. There was no way. I mean, I didn't even expect them to give us all the money. I mean, I had a school at the end of a dirt road, and I hired all the people, and it was my communards who were working there, and they had to have a different independent study. They just had to have a different arrangement, and we were just basically done. There were some parents, Luna and other, kept the little kids going for 2 years after we lost the contract, which was rather amazing to me. But the school building is still there, being used by a couple of people.
What then did you do after?
I don't know what I did right away, but Table Mountain was breaking up also, had broken up communally. The way we had envisioned it, what lasted about 20 years. And I think I went somewhere, like a big trip, but I can't remember exactly where. But because I had traveled a lot before I started, lived at Table Mountain. But then I worked at home care, and with a friend, she started a home care business. And I did that for quite a while. And then another friend and I taught home care for a number of years. In asking about me in particular, I was meditating by then for many, many years. And so later, much later, I taught meditation to kids also. And I also was going to say, mentioning about being gay, communes and gay women, and it was an important part because while I had the school, I don't know if you remember, but there was this law about you couldn't have gay teachers coming down the pike. And so I'm pretty sure that my superintendent and principal and everybody knew, but then I was lovers with a woman, but I had to tell them. And then we also had to do a contingent in the 4th of July parade because we had to. And there were lots and lots and lots of gay women over here and lots and lots and lots of professions. And it was very important that that become known to the greater community that may not have known.
And was there any blowback about that?
No, not that I can recall. No, and in my case, no, not at all. Look at the three questions that you brought up. One was about being Jewish, how many Jewish people, how many gay people, gay women, and why they came here, and what was the impact of alternative education and being in the country, being communal on kids and grandkids. Okay, so I was not really in touch with the Jewish aspect at that time. However, I will admit that I was enough in touch that my son had a bat mitzvah. So we celebrated at Table Mountain. We used to have big crowds for Thanksgiving and Passover. So I think we just kind of arbitrarily chose these holidays that would work for everybody. And those were actually our biggest holidays that I can remember. We had big Christmas, but that was more family. So being Jewish, there was a traveling rabbi, and then we imported someone. I think the history of Judaism had to do with being for the underdog, being equal, being, and coming out of the wasteland. Why do I say it didn't mean much? Because I didn't know anything, and I didn't want to know anything, and I grew up in a town where I was not Jewish. I was atheist from 13 on. So it was that. The others, I don't know how they happened to come here from New York, all those Jews. I don't know. And the gay women, I think, a lot came because of Country Women magazine, I think, and to visit their commune and their scene, I think. So I don't really know that either, although I did meet people who were from everywhere in the world who share certain values, look for a place where they can be with what they might call their tribe. I just think that's tremendous to talk about, from the French Romantic poets to the Bohemian to the hippies, and this combination of people that comes together for certain reasons in certain places in certain centuries, I think would be a tremendously wonderful history for you guys to whip out while you're still with us. And then the kids, you know, I think there are kids who are happy they grew up that way. There are kids that are unhappy they grew up really communally. Oh, we would have preferred to have food. I didn't. I was with this other neighbor instead. I hate this person. I love this person. The grandkids that I have and those people are very interested in it. And that's what I found. Although I have to say, when my daughter went to college, she first wrote a paper about the school and about, she said, oh, college is easy. And high school was the hardest I ever worked was at the Whale School. It was a different project. So I thought that was interesting. And I think that's probably common to other alternative places where kids are doing projects. But my granddaughter is very interested in how it affected her dad and her aunt and what it means now. A lot of the young people who live here now, a surprising number of them, in my opinion, are here again, that I knew as kids, and not because they failed in the outer world, that they made a choice to be here. Yeah, I know there are educators, there are construction people, there are just people doing well here, a lot of kids that I knew. Farmers, the whole food movement now is young people.
Was there a downside to this whole experiment, to this, your vision of what you wanted to do and how you were going to do it?
In the case of Table Mountain, the level and time involved of our divorce, that was certainly down for everybody. I think there was the same as life. If you're in an unhappy marriage, you're in an unhappy marriage. If you're angry, people are going to be mad at you for being angry. I mean, I think there's plenty of enmities left from not only Table Mountain, but all the communes that broke up here. And whether they were from patterning that people had before, whether they were from money at the end, whether they were from concepts of power tripping, whatever they were from, there are people who hold them and people who have let them go but are no longer connected. It just was life.
How would you say that the fact that you came out here and that you were living in the hate with a young man who helped buy Table Mountain and kind of turned it over to you guys to live there, how did that shape who you are now? How did that experience create you?
Is the question, did living communally for 20 years, how does it create me now?
Yes, and I think it's more than that. It's the fact that you got to come, that you came out here. You didn't stay on the East Coast. You came here. You came up here and did what you did in all of those different aspects. How did that impact you as a soul?
Well, I mean, I hope that I learned from my life. I hope I learned from mistakes. I hope I'm broad-minded and kind. I'm in a Jewish justice group, and we're looking at making Mendocino solar. We're doing climate work in the whole county and seeing what we can do to help that happen. But there are people who changed a lot. There are people who came out of very different religious backgrounds or different or went into different professions. I'm not one of those people. I was sort of always this little kid with curly hair that didn't fit somewhere. And then I did fit, and then I didn't fit. And yeah, so I think it's hard for me to answer that question because of that.
How do you think the fact that so many people came, like you at that time, what was the impact on the county? How did that shape, how did this influx of people shape Mendocino County?
Okay. So my view of how the influx of people shaped Mendocino County is pretty much all to the good. The arguments were over, you know, that yes, there were feuds, yes, there was terrible things, but really we got building codes paid much more attention to and got Class K happening. In the general plan, I believe there are still things that have not been implemented, but about clustering and so on. I haven't worked on this in a long time. I will again in relation to the energy work probably, but certainly the food movement here was influenced by the ones that came before, did their little organic farms, and now there are big organic farms. And culturally, the art scene was able to stay alive because of people who came and said, yeah, I'm going to be an artist, and I'm going to keep being an artist, and I'm going to go learn how to do pottery. And so I think it was to the good, basically, and also culturally in terms of what we're going through now in terms of learning more about relating, just learning more about relating to each other and about just what we're going through now as a culture in terms of narrowing down, having to stay open and wide, I think is helping people to stay open now too.
Tell me a little bit more about the work with Mendocino and wanting to help make it become solar.
And the Jewish Justice Group, what we've worked on so far is citizenship, scholarships for people becoming citizens, came out of immigration. And I can only say it in these very broad terms. We just had one meeting about, well, what are we going to do? But the aim is we're going to help. We're going to try to meet with other activist groups, have and meet and see what is needed on the county level, on the policy level. We're building a new mental health center, are we not, as a county? Perhaps that could be energy correct. I see, I don't even know the terms yet. Complete, I don't, you know, carbon neutral and energy correct and solar powered and all that. So this is the very, very tip beginning of people who have not been involved in county policy about energy and getting involved. My vision is just, hey, Mendocino, go solar and be a model that we can help, hopefully. But other people have visions of working on policy, others of working on public buildings, others of working on private buildings. What can we do and how can we do it? We're just starting. So this is an open invitation that this is our thing. Let's be positive here in Mendocino, right? Let's go for climate work that can make us a model of how to do it.
That gives me shivers because it's so great. It's so interesting because what is coming up for those of us who are working on this project is this recognition that so much did happen, we think. So much did change because of the people who came and the energy and the visions that they brought and what they were able to accomplish because they were working together and because of the joy and the just that sense of we can do this. And that it's time, it's really time for us to reconnect with each other and say what else needs to be done. And this is a direct example of that. And one of the things we were talking about last night was, well, people want to come and they don't have a place to live. There's not an opportunity for them literally to have a home, to have a place to live. What can we do? And we have no answers, but it's maybe together with our collective minds, we can figure out how we could make that a more workable solution, how we could do that.
Yes, I think the living situation is the biggest problem for our little corner of paradise here at this point. Fort Bragg now will allow a certain type of second dwellings on their properties. I don't know any more about it than that, but I know that they passed something recently. Yes, that would be tremendous. And tying it in with this, dealing correctly with the issues of climate would be fantastic. I'd like to say, because I didn't mention any name, I want to say that, like, this excitement of talking with both of you and the fun and where you just went with it, but I want to say just the depth of appreciation I have for all the people, both that I lived with, that I did this with, that I was neighbors with, all the children who grew up in all of our communes, all of them, know whether they're feeling good, happy, bad about it all, just my appreciation that for what we all did do that was different and positive that can continue in this new form, I hope.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
So we're just discussing what, why we care about the issue of how we, what we did different, why did we come back to the land? Why is living on the land important? Why is living communally important? And I think that a good deal of it is in reaction, actually, to, in reaction to where America went and where we went as a culture and where we went also out of need, because that's happened again with climate displacement. We're going to have more people in cities. But the thing about connection, and here also, as you're speaking about, well, what should we do about housing? We live like the suburbs were designed. We live in a way that nourishes loneliness, not in a way that nourishes connection and togetherness. And that's just not healthy for people. And we physically live that way out here in the country especially. So in our example of trying to make these communes, if you look at places in England or old places, you know, that there wasn't just like there was this one house out. It was this 10 little houses out on that farm, because they all lived in this, in that little farm, and then the tent could go to the other place. And I think, you know, we were trying to take care of ourselves in some way. We were very bereft. I think we were, really, in some ways. And some people, it was both. I'm moving towards something that's healthier and that shares, that recognizes that being an individual is a very small part of what it means to be alive. And we've overdone that in America also, the individualism. And so it's a very small part. It's just being part of other human beings is the bigger part. I think it's important because it recognizes that bigger wholeness more deeply as a way to spend each day. And we may not do it exactly like that, but it's definitely helpful to our daily life. So we can say hello to a stranger today.
So the fact that Table Mountain Commune didn't last, or that other communes on the coast didn't last or inland, does that teach us something? Does that, is that instructive? Is there something to be learned from that?
The fact that communes didn't last, I think, is instructive just in terms of saying, hey, marriages don't last, brothers and sisters don't stay friends, there's a million reasons to hate people, which is the writer. But I think it also is instructive if we look at the times. Solar cells didn't get cheaper. They're just starting to do that now. The fields where we gleaned food for free, they changed the rules and they made them more crazy in terms of they tilled it under instead of letting you pick up the rest of the melons.
Things change is what you were saying. Rules change.
Things changed on a big scale. The economy changed. There were no more free boxes. The economy got tighter, which is an interesting piece of people who try to move back here. And no housing, it changed and made it harder to be communal. And there was no built-in counseling about how to deal with your childhood. It only was built in was the physical stuff and the organizational stuff. In the last 20 years, I've worked at, people look at co-housing for older people, right? And everybody wants to still do the same thing. And I say, no, if you're going to do co-housing for older people, they still have to call their own plumber. You leave everything in place that they need to do, but you build in communication help, and then people will be able to change their lives more.
Thank you so much.